Good afternoon. Welcome each one of you back to this afternoon session. Thank you for that theme song, Llewellyn. Take time to be holy. I wonder sometimes if it's not one of the most important neglected things ever, is just to simply take time. Take time for God. I don't know, if you got a cup that's fairly full of water and you would take another one and pour it in, and once it's full, you would keep pouring. What would you think about such a person? Think they're real smart? Have water running everywhere. In some ways, preaching this afternoon and then again tonight feels a little bit like doing that to you. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do about it. I didn't design these things, and I don't mean this critical at any committee or anything. So I guess all I can do is hope that God helps you retain what you need, and maybe the cup will be cleaner, if nothing else, I don't know. So bear with me. And one thing I usually do, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it this time, but maybe I will. I don't know that I have anything to share that will be such a huge blessing to anyone necessarily, that's not the point, but I usually make a brief version of my notes available if somebody wants it emailed or something. So if you can't take notes and you need something and you think you can't hold it, come talk to me afterwards and I'll be happy to arrange it. Sometimes it takes me a little bit. Okay, I didn't really follow what I like other people to do in this separate thing here. You girls were missing out on at least some of this. There was this question that Steve was asking the young man. Brother Steve asked him, he said, how should a young man respond when he picks up signals that a young lady is chasing him? And then he had the audacity to just go ask me if I ever had anybody chase me. And I just went, because I wasn't quite sure how much time he wanted me to take out of his class, because I probably could have finished his class. Now, it's not because I've been chased by that many, necessarily. There's predominantly one comes to my mind, and when he said that, I instantly had to think of this situation, and I'm not really sure it pertains to my topic. But as I look over this program, I felt a little cheated. Again, I don't mean this critically, but it looked to me like they gave him all the interesting topics. I get to teach on this about 3 months out, 3 weeks out of the year. And so then they gave me all the ones that the youth really don't want to hear. And after he's done talking about something interesting, then you shift back. Now you go honor parents. Who doesn't like courtship? I mean, yeah, sure. But then honoring parents, well, yeah, that's a duty. Anyway, so maybe before I get into mine, I should make amends for not having answered your question more clearly, Brother Steve. So I'm not going to say there's maybe some variations about how hard some young ladies do this or pursue this, so we won't get into all the nuances there. But I'll tell you about one situation. I think I was about 19, 20, and I was visiting my brother in Utah, and he'd gone into the house, and he had a mini barn business, so he had this lot out, shopping lot out in front of his house. And I had stayed there. He said, if you stay here, probably nobody will come. But if they do, you know, just tell them I'll be back soon. So I'm just out in the lot wandering around, really doing nothing. And all of a sudden this, I didn't know they had these in Utah. We got a lot of them in Arkansas. And pardon the term, but I call them redneck cars. I came up, they were, brrr, and don't you know, it pulls right up into the mini barn lot. Okay, well. So they drive right up to me. I was standing outside where they could see me, and there's a hillbilly and a hill nanny and in the car, and then another one in the back seat. And they were talking, and they wanted some pricing. I said, well, I'm sorry. This is my brother. I'm just visiting him, and if you could wait, he'll give that to you. And they're like, okay, so where are you from? Just to make small talk, I said, Kentucky. And they're like, Kentucky? Ah, moonshine. Do you drink moonshine? I said, no, I don't. And then the lady's like, are you married? I said, no, I'm not. She says, well, would you like to have a woman? Well, That's an awful question to ask a 19, 20-year-old man, isn't it? I mean, if we got red blood cells in our body, there's some aspect where that would look enticing to some degree. How do you honestly answer such a question? So, you know, I just stalled around, sort of a moment there again. And she's like, well, I'm tired of this guy, so would you have me? No, ma'am. So I don't know. Maybe there's different ways to do that, Steve, but that was definitely a no ma'amer for me. So maybe enough on that, but I thought maybe you all needed something to wake you back up. So there you go. So now going back to the hard things in life. Honor your parents. Maybe before you open your Bibles anywhere, could not anybody of you sort of do my Bible quiz here again? Can any of you tell me what number of the Ten Commandments this thing is to honor your father and thy mother? If you go to Exodus 20, is usually the, if you see Ten Commandments listed, they usually follow that pattern. So what number? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Fifth. Okay, thank you. Good job. Okay, so we've got two numbers, and you're right, it's number 5 in Exodus 20, but it is also the first one with promise, which is an interesting point that I'll try to touch on here. Maybe before I get into this, I have a little struggle with the subject like this, not that it's not a wonderful subject, but simply the fact that we almost tend to focus that maybe there's negative relationships, right? What is there to talk about in the positive? Hopefully you can build them better. But so in pointing out areas, I'm not trying to suggest that I feel our churches are a fail in the way that our youth honor their parents. I'm thankful for many things I see. But at the same time, what good does it do me to stand up here and tell you where you're doing things right in every way, right? If you're doing right, keep on. And so if you see some things you're doing, praise God, keep growing. And for me, it's so important. It's not maybe that even my life has been a complete failure in every way, but I still got ground to make up. So let's not look at this as a negative thing, but as a thing of growing. So I want to give you three of my life illustrations to start us out so you can follow what I'm talking about. So when I was 19, I think it was, I wanted a vehicle as bad as probably any young man does. I don't know. There's just something about when you have a set of wheels you can call your own. You feel like somebody, don't you? I don't know. Maybe you're not that way. But and so Dad finally, I'll help you buy a truck. That way I can have some say about how this thing looks, right, I think was the idea. So we went out truck shopping. And I don't know if any of you fellows have to go buy a truck with your dad, investing part of it. It's somehow you have different priorities in what maybe a truck should look like. Any of you associate with the possibility of that? So especially if you know my dad. Dad and I are just opposite in so many ways. And he believes very strongly in utility. He drove minivans all his life, pretty much. He does have a car now. And, you know, he would haul anything on the roof of his minivan. It was how he utilized his vehicle. I thought he needed a truck so bad. Well, so when I'm truck shopping, I'm not only shopping for something to haul something. I mean, just to be honest with you, I was looking for something to, you know, sort of make me feel like somebody, sort of, you know, stand out of the crowd or, you know, be somebody here a little bit. So you can imagine that we had a couple things. We finally found this truck sort of in the price range we were thinking and all, which wasn't all that much. And it needed, how shall I say this? That was a truck that somebody had customized to some extent for their own taste, and some of them were very odd and some of them were just down my alley. So some of them I was very happy to change because, for example, I had some really dumb wheels on that stuck way out the side. That wasn't my kind of thing. So convinced Dad that it needed some, like, the factory wheels back on it, and so he thought that was he wasn't sure about the wheels, but when I got him on, oh yeah, that's good, so we agreed just great on that. But then there was something else, one point in particular, a small one, but this thing had a big chrome bug shield, and I just really loved that bug shield. I thought it looked good. It was a 96 Dodge, so tells you a little bit how old I am. Had this chrome bug shield, and Dad thought, you know, that's a lot of chrome up on that front end, maybe we should take that off. And I said, oh, Dad, that'd be a lot of work to take that thing off. It'd be hard. I don't know. Any of you ever put a bug shield on or off? I don't know. Would you agree with my assessment? I think today they would come off a little easier, but back then it would have come off hard. And I think there was maybe a different way it would have come off hard than nuts and bolts. But anyways, we'll let that one for the moment. Another one that I face to some extent, and I say this very respectfully, I don't want you to feel like I have, praise God for the opportunity of redemption, of growing. So in sharing this, I no way want to make you feel like I have a problem currently with parents or my wife's parents. But when we were approaching marriage, my wife's parents pretty much wanted to require us to live in their community for a couple years. And while the home I grew up, I think Dad was, I would have called him a fairly strict dad in a lot of ways. When we became of age at 21 in our home, he went from making our decisions, in a large extent, he had a transition period there, but he went from basically saying yes or no to our decisions to filling the role of a counselor, very distinctly so, maybe more than what my father-in-law probably would have felt. And so to have a potential father-in-law telling me you have to live in my community just, I don't know, it hit me all wrong, I'll just say that. I think I was probably just as much wrong as he was, if not more. But it made some really difficult times there. And so should I have just left him tell me? Should I have submitted to that? And some of these I'll come back to a little bit, but I'm just telling you, how do you relate to that? I was 20, yeah, we were into our 20s. Well, it's not that we were just 18-year-olds or anything like that, to be clear. And then more recently, so that's more the youth aspect of my life. Just more recently, my father and mother are living in Mexico currently. My brother-in-law and I bought a house for them in Arkansas. They're at the age where it's good for them to be around their children. Authority is a little shifting. You know, it's sort of funny if you think about it. Right now, you probably feel like mom and dad to some degree have authority over you. Well, it don't take very many years till that thing tilts the other way, and all of a sudden mom and dad find out that there's some authority on the other side. And so, long story short, I was pulling an RV to the Texas border so that a nephew could meet them and pull it the rest of the way down. And Dad came along up because the permit was in his name. And there in Laredo, Texas, a couple of weeks ago this was, we got to talking about his banking, and I take care of some of their financial things because of being across in Mexico there. And we were talking about the money that's in these certain accounts, and he said, Joe, this account, my checking has this much and my savings has this much. And I said, well, I only have access to your checking. Oh, no, you have access to both. I said, no, I don't. I don't think you set it up right or something because I can only see the one. But I said, in the one you have, it's the checking, and you are the amount you're saying is that is in savings is actually in your checking. And he just flat wouldn't believe me. And he kept going on that, you know, this much is in savings and this much in checking. And I told him, Dad, you're wrong. Checking has this much in it. Your savings, I don't have any idea what it is, but I do know your checking has this amount and you're getting the two switched around. And he says, yeah. He says, I know you think that, but he said, you're just wrong. He says, I know this is all switched around. So back to the question is, how do I honor my father when he is just flat wrong? I mean, he still is my dad, right? So how should I relate it to that? What's the right thing to do? So I'd like to answer some of those questions. I'm not saying by no means do I feel wisdom's going to die with me. And to be honest with you, I wonder if maybe I'm not the last person that should be preaching this. At the same time, those are life questions. How are you going to relate to it? What does the Bible say? Does the Bible give us some direction on how to relate it in all this? So one problem I have in, you know, when I was ordained some years ago, I always liked short preachers, and that's why I'm conscious of the clock more than what I should be, because I tried to hold other people at standard, now I find myself not holding my own previous standard. And I always have this problem because I like to have a scriptural foundation which takes some time to build, and then I want to make this practical for you. So if you can't bear with me, somebody said, are you going to preach till 5:30? I said, well, I really don't know. So I really appreciate your patience with me in the past, and we'll try to do the best we can so that you don't have to eat too fast here. But let's start with the scriptural foundation. Of course, we could go to Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, a verse I already mentioned. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now, I'd like to consider the meaning of the word honor. If I look honor up in the Strong's Concordance, in the Hebrew meaning of that word, to help me understand more clearly what God was saying, that word translated honor in English has a very broad meaning. There's all sorts of words in Strong's there. Basically, to make it concise in my own understandable way, I would say it could mean anything from a negative, heavy, and burdensome duty
Two, maybe a little bit more on the positive side, one of richly and fully glorifying someone. So you could have just this duty to honor and you just plod along, and I've got to honor dad and mom. It's just something I got to do. I don't feel like it, but I'm going to do it. Or you could have the thing of, you know, I love them. I'm going to try to honor them. Now, to take this further to see how serious God actually took this, there's a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18 to 21, where it expands. And the penalty for this, well, why don't I just read it quickly, if you listen closely? If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him unto the elders of the city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. So evidently we're not talking about a five-year-old here. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones so that he dies. So shall they put away evil from among all Israel, shall hear and fear. Whew. Did he make that serious or what? Stone him. Can you imagine? I think the crime rate in America would be pretty low if they'd take that approach to honor, don't you? Wow. Remember, that's not me talking. That's reading out of the Old Testament what God told Moses to relate to this thing. I'd like to read Leviticus 19 and 2 to 3 yet out of the Old Testament. It says, God talking to Moses, speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, say unto them, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Ye shall fear every man, his mother, and his father, and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. If you do a little research on that word fear, it would equal to revere or to be afraid of. To revere or to be afraid of. Now, I hope no one has to have a terrified fear of their parents. Please understand me. That's not healthy. But at the same time, as you approach your father, your mother, there should be a level of respect, maybe is a more common word, that you are putting yourself, you're opening yourself. And in what they say, you will accept it to the best of your ability. And I need to expound on that a little bit more. Maybe let's go into the New Testament before I go too much further. This is a command that's pretty much reiterated or repeated in the New Testament. One of those being in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. Now, I find it interesting when I look at the word honor now, again, it's translated from the Greek rather than from the Hebrew. It has a little different twist. There's no thought now of being this burdensome responsibility. It now has the thought of to prize and value and revere. And to me, that's beautiful. There's a difference. Yes, the law can command, whether it be the law of a nation or the law of Israel back in the Old Testament, the law could command to honor. You could come in with a subdued face. You could always outwardly conform. You could give yourself to that. No matter how you felt inside, you could just control your actions. But in the New Testament now, in talking to Christian children, he's saying prize, value your parents. Make them something special, a special part of your life. Now, that can be very difficult, or maybe not so difficult, depending on what you find yourself. But I really like the thought. Now it's taken a thing from a burdensome duty to the opportunity to prize and value. And there's one other word that's used in the New Testament. It's also used in the passage I just read, and again in Colossians 3:20. And that word is obey. The word obey, if some other words we could use, is to listen and to hear as being a subordinate. Is that an employer talking to you? You listen so as to be able to do what he wants. Is it in the military where somebody of rank talks to somebody of lower rank? They are expected to do, to heed and to conform. So Colossians 3:20, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. In all things. How do we put this into working action today? Briefly going back to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 2, the phrase, the first commandment with promise, which Brother Steve already pointed out to us, intrigues me. What does the first commandment with promise mean? Why does he say, honor your father and mother? It's the first commandment with promise. Don't the other commandments come with benefits, with promises? Why does the New Testament particularly tell us that? It is the first of the Ten Commandments in which a specific result is promised if the command is obeyed. Did you notice that? If I read Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, it says, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. The indication is that if you don't follow this, your life will be cut short, right? So it's a promise of longer, basically, longer physical life as I take it. So it's the first commandment with promise. You know, in the prayer, the previous four commandments of the Ten Commandments, God gave reasons as to why he expected compliance. But this is the first one in which he gives a direct promise of results. He told him, don't have other gods before me because I am the Lord your God and all that. But in this, it's the first one where he points out that there will be tangible results in this life for how you obey. Or disobey, for that matter. And I want you to think about that for briefly. You know, in a natural sense, a child that obeys is generally much safer than a child who disobeys. Would you say that's true? In fact, one thing that I find so difficult to grasp about this area of Pennsylvania, and I'm not trying to be anti-cultural. I love different ways. But there's one thing that just boggles my mind around here, and it's how some of these houses are just right on the road. I live in Arkansas, and I guess land is cheaper down there. I don't know. It probably is some spots. And it's close to Texas. I don't know if Texas spill over or what, but we don't build houses on the road. I mean, even the dinkiest little county road, the county owns from 20 foot of the middle of the road out. And you just don't do anything there. Even if you built 20 foot off of their line, I don't think they would be real proud of you. Even I'm not sure what would happen. But you just don't do it. And here, I mean, there's especially one road down here. I don't even know which intersection it is, but these people's porches in the way to see if anybody's coming. I don't know how y'all do it. My wife is like, she's surprised any of these people's children live to age. They think all ours would get killed in no time if we lived in a place like that. And, you know, I guess obedience is probably even more necessary in Pennsylvania than it is in Arkansas so far as physical life, it appears to me, because you'd have to be fairly careful where you ride your tricycle around in this part of the world. My girls, I mean, they can ride a trike pretty well jolly everywhere they please. But anyway, so you see, you know, just take something as simple as a four-year-old riding a trike or a bike. If they don't obey what their parents say, mom and dad say, don't go beyond this point. Well, for us, you know, that's one thing. But here, if they go beyond that point, there's somebody coming around the corner. That may be end of Johnny. Who knows? So that's in a natural sense. So let's think about the application. You know, this command to honor parents, like most commands, is easiest to appreciate and consider in a theological sense, right? If I would stand up here and I would spend the rest of my sermon just I can't put the right ending on it. But just talking about the theology of honoring parents, y'all could leave and, yeah, it was good, it didn't. Didn't affect me, you know, I don't have to change nothing, that's good, right? Well, is it good? You know, I think it's interesting in our Baptist circles, I don't mean to be critical, but that's who I'm talking to for the most part, so I'm going to just tell you what I think, is we like to sort of think that we do a pretty good job of knowing Scripture and practicing Scripture, and God bless us where we do. The fact of the matter is, I'm not so sure we do much better than other so-called Christians out there sometimes, in that we find our comfort zone. And we set the cruise, and we feel as long as our cruise is set right, we're good. And I think this may be one of these areas where maybe not everything is as good as we think it is. Another thing I'd like to point out about this commandment in the context of the Ten Commandments is that it's also the first commandment that directly involves other humans. Have you thought about that? If you go to Exodus chapter 20 and start reading down through, the first four are more about how we're to think, relate, and view, and act in relation to God. Then all of a sudden, he shifts to this one, honor your father and mother. All of a sudden, he's gone from looking at God to looking at other humans. Do you know what problems that makes? Do you know what complications that brings? So if there's a problem between God and me, where does the problem lie? Anyone? With me, right? If I'm sincerely seeking God and I'm honest before him, I can unreservedly know that if there's some problem in this relationship, it starts and ends with Joe. There's no other option. It might be a lack of understanding or something about God, but it still rests here. Now, guess what? If you now put two people in a relationship, and yes, God is an ingredient, but now there's two people, now there's potentially two problems, right? You follow what I'm saying? Now it's not just simply my problem if things aren't working the way they should be. Potentially there is somebody else that is being a problem. And so that's why it makes this subject somewhat tricky, because there's a wide variety of parents and children and possible problem combinations. You know, your relationship with your parents is likely quite different from what mine was. And therefore, this command to honor them will likely have a very different nuance for you than what it potentially has for me. The area that you will face the battle to honor may not ever involve a checking and savings account, for example. But for me, a couple weeks ago, it did. So how can I share in a way that makes this thing profitable for you? Another question I have is, does honor your father and your mother mean that your parents have complete and unending control of your children, of you, until they pass away or whatever? How else do you get rid of them? So, I mean, he says, children obey your parents in all things. And he didn't say until you're 20 or 21. I don't know what the going age is around here for becoming of age, but you know what I mean. The Bible didn't give us 20, 21 as an age of now. You can go do your own thing. It doesn't. So what's the statute of limitations on this thing? Anyone? This is pretty important. You had better know. So what's your catechism on this one? Can you tell me? When are you free to tell Dad I'm going to go do my own thing? I guess y'all are just going to sort of stuck with Mom and Dad the rest of your life. Is that what you're telling me? I don't hear any ages. Okay, thank you. You know, I need to be careful, and I want to be clear here. I think we often make excuses and dismiss the guidance and caution that God has given us in relation to some of these relationships long before it's justifiable. I think it's very easy for me to say, well, Dad wasn't what he should be, Mom could be different, and so therefore I respond wrong. And I justify myself in that it's their problem. I think that happens most of the time. That said, the question still remains, do parents have complete and unending control of their children's lives? In a way, Brother Steve seems to be telling me that you need to get married if you want to get out from underneath them. Anyway, you're fine, yeah. So we want to look and dig into that a little bit. May I read to you Matthew chapter 15? I have a number of verses here if you want to turn to that. But be Matthew chapter 15, verse 3 is where I'll begin, down through verse 9. And Christ is talking to the Pharisees here, and he talks fairly plainly. But he, Christ, answered and said unto them, the Pharisees, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and thy mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or mother, it is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or mother, he shall be free. Thus have ye made the commandments of God of none effect by your tradition. Ye hypocrites, well did Isaiah the prophesy of you, saying, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandment of men. Now, basically, Christ was using an illustration here and saying that Hebrew culture tradition had made a way that you didn't really have to honor Mom and Dad anymore. You could give this gift, and I don't know if I understand all the aspects of it, and then you could say, Mom and Dad, I'm busy over here. I gave this to God, so therefore now I'm no longer obligated to you. What did Christ say about it? He says that don't work. He says your tradition is running in the face of what God actually wants done. So I would venture to say that there is not and there should not be a systematic and presumptuous neglecting of parents and our honor to them. And personally, I guess I don't mean to disagree with anyone, but I don't think there's a statute of limitations on that. In other words, I think that continues as long as my life continues. Now let me, I'll explain a little bit here in a minute. But there should not be a systematic and presumptuous neglecting of parents and our duty to honor them. As I see it, there's only the legitimate reason for not deliberately putting into a practice a command God has given is if in the deliberate practice of that command, we violate another command or principle. Do you follow me? So the only way I can be excused for not honoring my parents is if there's another command or principle that I would be violating to do so. So briefly, when we find these commands seemingly bringing conflict, where maybe it says honor your father and your mother, on the other hand, let's say potentially, this probably doesn't happen a lot, but let's say that father, mother are asking something that would conflict with the laws of God, then we must carefully and honestly search our heart, its motives and its desires, and take the way of humility and complete surrender. Guess what? When I disagree with somebody and I don't feel like doing what they're asking me to do, one of the hardest things for me is to take the path of humility and complete surrender. Because all of a sudden I want to drive, right? You know what that feeling is like? And as long as you have that attitude, potentially you're not going to respond right, no matter how wrong they are. And this thing of the way of humility, of honestly searching our heart and coming to complete surrender before God, may lead to different results. This could be the way, potentially it would mean that I should just submit to my parents, even though I don't think or see what they're asking for as necessary. But it could also mean that potentially God is asking me to sacrifice their goodwill and good feelings about me. For example, let's go back to that truck and the bug shield. I should have just taken that thing off no matter how hard it came off, right? That's what Dad wanted. Take it off. Sure, it would have come off hard, probably out of the heart of Joe more than off the truck itself. But it wouldn't have hurt me one little bit. It should have just come off. Now, that's not saying that that's always the case. I know of a dear brother that grew up in a very traditional, though albeit not very spiritual, setting. And he was new. He was married. I think he said he had two children at the time. And he felt that for his family, as he began studying his Bible, he felt he couldn't raise a family in the setting he found himself. And so he was living on his dad's farm, adjoining farms. And so he walked over the field one night to talk to his parents about his concern and what he felt God wanted him to do. And he just simply told me, he said, they couldn't understand. They wouldn't see his concerns, what he felt he needed to do. They wouldn't support him. Basically, they told him if he left, they would write him off. And on the way home, as he walked through the hayfield that separated their houses, he told me, he said, I just fell down in that field and cried. But he still did it. But notice the difference. Too often, dear young people, when we disagree with mom and dad, we take our own way, but we fail to fall down before God and let it tear our heart. I guess I personally feel that I'm not suggesting you can do everything. The parents, I don't know, there's probably all kinds of parents represented behind you youth here. And it's not saying that all of them are asking necessarily good things. But if you find yourself having to go against counsel, it shouldn't be a thing of I'm going to show them. But it should be a thing that really tears at your heart as you just humbly seek to follow God and what he has for you. I want to look at some additional principles that affect how we honor and maybe to what extent we just do the action they ask of us. So in Acts chapter 5, verse 29, I've got a lot of ground to cover, so I'll just keep it moving. But Acts chapter 5, verse 29, it says, then Peter and the other apostle answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. This was when they were before the council for having preached Christ and having told the people that he was the Lord, as we heard. I think that principle, we need to obey God rather than man, is just what I was telling you about my friend there. He had to do what needed to be done. And I think there was an honorable way for him to do that, though. And anyway, maybe that's jumping ahead. But you know, where God's and man's authority conflict, we must choose obedience to God. And here's the, if you want to know the basis or how this works, God, if you read Romans 13, we could go a lot of different places, but God is the source of any legitimate authority that man has. You follow me? If whatever authority man has, whether they recognize it or not, comes from God, indirect. Whether it's president, whether it's the policeman, whether it's your mom and dad. And as all that authority flows from God, it's only a legitimate authority as it asks things that God hasn't. As it does not ask things that are contradictory against what God has asked. Do you follow me? So as soon as that authority is asking something that conflicts with what God has already told us, it becomes illegitimate. Now, it doesn't say that you can just dismiss it and walk away and say they have no authority. They still have authority in other areas, but simply saying there is no authority that can fly in the face of what God says that we give legitimacy to. Now, Matthew chapter 10, verse 34 through 39, real quick, it says, "Think not that I," this is Christ speaking, "think not that I'm come to send peace on the earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I'm come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's foes or enemies shall be those of his own household." Does that sound like what you have when you conflict at home? Is this the verse you go to and say, look, Dad, Mom, I'm not getting along here, and Jesus said this would happen. "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. He that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it." I don't think this is an excuse to have poor home relationships. But what I think he is saying here is that if I wholly follow God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, I will find myself at crosswise with those who are not, right? If I am wholly following God, I will have priorities. I will have whatever else it is that will at times conflict. And potentially, praise God, where there's children who have caught a hold of God and are wholly following him. Yet maybe their parents are unbelievers or at least are not very on fire for God. So that means there will be some conflict in that relationship. It's unavoidable because there's a different master. And you know, in such a situation, we must choose God over the commendation and goodwill of even parents. Maybe I'm overemphasizing this, but I want to be so clear. It's not something that's done lightly. It should, if I have to go against what counsel that's coming from parents, it should cause pain and sadness. This principle is not a loophole, a way out to have my own way, but it is a thing of putting God first, of dissecting my motives, seeing what I'm really concerned about, and of choosing kingdoms. Okay, I want to go to the life of Christ a little bit and use him as an example. Jesus, at 12 years of age, accompanied his parents to the temple for a feast. You find that in Luke 2. You know, and after the feast, he stayed behind while mom and dad started traveling home. And Joseph and Mary seemed to take for granted that he was with friends. And so they didn't really worry about this till the third day. They went and checked with all the friends and know Jesus. So they go back to Jerusalem, trying to find him. And you can imagine, I don't know, we have a wonderful place to stay, and it's a big place. And somehow one of my daughters got this idea. She just wanders around out there, and we haven't been able to find her twice for about 5 minutes. And you know, if a parent can't find their child, it gets a little interesting. Like, where is this person? What did they do? And I can't imagine, you know, a 12-year-old, you'd have some trust, some confidence he could handle himself, yet still he's gone. Where is he? What did he do? Anyway, and then I'll just read verse 48. "And when they saw him," this was standing in the midst of the teachers, "they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing." Some stress involved there. And in 49, Jesus, he said unto them, "How is it that you've sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business?" You know, Jesus had a different focus, a different calling from what his parents knew and understood, right? Joseph and Mary were still, even with the way he came and everything had worked, they were still human beings. And they still were limited in vision. They didn't really understand who he was. But I love Jesus' response. What did he do? He said, You all need to get this. I'm different from what you think. Is that what he did?
You know, verse 51 says, and he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. He was subject unto them. So there's a time in life to simply be subject unto them. Maybe they don't understand. Maybe they're missing the big picture. Maybe they are messed up. But there's still a place for a child to be subject unto them.
Now, that said, let's keep going. Can any of you tell me, did Jesus stay in that carpenter shop for the duration of his earthly life?
30, 40, 50, 60 years later, he's still making shavings. Is that how it was? No, there came a time, roughly 18 years later, when he laid down those tools, quit making sawdust, brushed it off, went out the door, and went and did what God had for him to do. So I'm not saying that 30 is the perfect age. I don't know that I am wise enough to tell you that. Hopefully, if you find yourself in a place where you feel mom and dad are going to make you make sawdust forever, hopefully you have some wise people that can tell you what age you should brush that sawdust off and get busy with God. But I think there does come a time where we respectfully still pursue God's work if our parents just aren't coming around to it. And I'd like to ask you, how did his family respond to him when he began this ministry? Maybe the first one is a prophecy out of Psalm 69, verse 7 through the first part of verse 9. Listen closely. It says, because for thy sake I have borne reproach. Shame hath covered my face. I believe it's speaking about Christ here, as I understand it. I am become a stranger unto my brethren and an alien unto my mother's children. For the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Sounds like a bit of a strained relationship with the people at home, doesn't it? I don't know if alien. And because he was zealous for what God had for him to do, it created a separation. Sometimes that happens. It's not something we should want to happen, but it may happen. Let me go to the New Testament and read a verse to you. Mark chapter 3, verse 21 says this. And when his friends, and if you look up that word friends, excuse me, it doesn't necessarily mean friends, maybe just the way we mean it, but means those that were near of kin and relationship. Those people from Nazareth, basically, probably his family involved. And when his friends, Jesus' friends, heard of it, they went out to lay hold on him, for they said he is beside himself. Now, I don't know. I've never had my family say, Joe, you're crazy. Maybe they felt like it a couple times, but they've actually never done it. And they've never come threatened to tie me up. But that's basically, am I making the wrong thing out of it? It basically sounds to me like they were pretty serious about this. He's messed up. And you know, let's go back to Psalm there, 69. It says, for the zeal of the house has eaten me up. Christ was zealously, wholeheartedly doing God's work, and his earthly family did not understand, not at this point. So back there comes a time and a day when we have to follow God's plan, even if parents do not support and bless that step. I'm going to go on to Luke chapter 8, verse 19 through 21. Then came to him his mother and his brethren, and could not come at him or near him for the press. And it was told him by certain which said, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to see thee. And he answered and said unto them, my mother and my brethren are those which hear the word of God and do it. Now, I don't think that Jesus was necessarily renouncing all earthly ties, but he was saying that the people that are wholly seeking God are really my family, my first priority. And it's wonderful if that's a combined family trait, but where it's not, God's work, his people need to come first. We must choose and make God and his people greater importance and import than blood connections. I don't know, maybe I'll skip over a little bit this. So back to the question, how much should parents control and direct their children's lives? I really figure if there's an interesting question in here to youth, it's probably that one. So how much should your parents direct and control your lives? I think I'm moving along pretty good for what I had, but some of you look sort of tired. Is there a respectful way for y'all to stand and stretch a little bit and yawn if you need to and then sit back down? So go ahead and do it. Why don't you just maintain standing for a little bit? So how much should parents control and direct their children's lives? You know, I find it interesting that both New Testament passages where children are told to obey their parents, it's immediately followed by a verse telling parents not to provoke their children.
And to me, that's telling me something. Is that like all relationships, the parent and child relationship is best when both focus on what God asks for them, right? So there is a command to children, obey your parents, for this is right. But then he goes on and says, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Failing the word, lest they be, can anybody help me? Don't have that right here in this. Discouraged is the word that's coming, but I don't think it's right. Okay, thank you, discouraged. So it's, you know, there's a correlation, there's a working together. You can sit back down. So I made a list here, and I don't know, maybe I should be preaching to your parents for this part, and since you didn't bring them along, I'm sort of stuck. But at the same time, I have four things that I think a wise parent will not decide for their child. And then I'm going to try to tell you briefly how I think you should work through it if they try to. A few things a wise parent would not try to decide for their child. Now, in saying this, I'm not saying that a parent should not be there for their child through this process. I'm simply saying that they let their child drive, so to speak. They ride along and they're the advisor, not the director. The first one is choosing when, if God is calling and when they should respond to that call. Finally, your parents cannot make a spiritual commitment for you as much as I, as a parent, would love to do that. Maybe when the time comes for my daughters, I can't. I can't do it for my wife. I can't do it for my daughters. That has to be a personal decision that everyone makes before God for themselves. Yes, a parent can by all means advise. I mentioned last night about helping them count the cost. You know, if you're ever a parent, help your child or whoever you're working with, help them count the cost. But finally, that final decision, that final tallying up of the cost, am I willing to pay this, is an intensely personal thing that no one else can do. And, you know, if, like I mentioned a little bit last night, it seems to me that one of the big problems in our churches is that we have many young people that are part of the church because it's expected, because it's what dad and mom want. It's the easiest way to not be the odd person, the person that everybody prays for when we have revival meetings and that kind of thing. And if there's one thing that's going to take our churches out, it's people that are part of the church that aren't really part of the church. It's got to be a personal choice. Mom and dad can't do it for you. And I don't know. I hope there's no parents that push their children necessarily. It's great. I had, when I was almost 16 before I made a commitment, which was way too old. And I think my mom told me probably the closest to pressuring she ever got was she told me, Joe, I'm praying for you. And I don't have a problem with that. But I've seen and heard of things that went quite a bit beyond that, and it's wrong. And it's wrong. And it usually does more harm than good, so I don't know if I can fix parents that do that, but I can tell you how it should be, I guess. Okay. The second one that a wise parent will not decide for their child is what their life's vocation or ministry will be. I'm not sure what the right word is there. I say this carefully. I mean in perpetuity. There's dad painted houses. And so when I got out of school, he thought the most natural thing in the world would be that I would help him paint house. And I didn't think so. Painting, guys, it just isn't a real macho thing to do, is it? Yeah. I just couldn't hardly handle this. But, you know, it didn't hurt me a bit. Now the nice thing is, it created one continuing problem in my life, is that there's very few people that could paint my house well enough for me, even though I don't like to do it. So now I'm still stuck with doing it myself, because I know how. And so I'm not trying to indicate that a parent would not require their child to do something for a while that is not their preference. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I, as a parent, don't think it, if I'm wise, I don't try to tell my child that this, you're going to be a doctor or whatever, farmer. Some of that needs to sort its way out. And there's, again, I think it's wise for parents to be there for counsel. I think it's very wise for youth to ask their parents, what skills do you think would be useful in my life? But I'm still suggesting that finally, at the end of the day, it's best if a child makes that choice for themselves. And my biblical basis for that would be John chapter 21, verse 20 through 22. I don't know, maybe you'll think I'm stretching a point here, but it's where Peter was looking at John and Jesus told him what his future held. And then Peter's like, well, what about this man here? And Jesus said, well, you know, if I want him to live till I come back again, what's that to you? And then the statement sort of got hijacked. But really, even for, as a parent, I guess I personally feel if God wants to call my children to a mission field, to something that I have never dreamed of them doing, what is that to me? Do you follow me? And so, again, a wise parent, I feel, will allow that choice finally to their child. Number three, you may like this one, I don't know. I think we'd have a pretty big rebellion in our hands if we try to change it anyways. And that is, I think a wise parent lets their child decide who they want to get married to. I don't know what you think about that. Do you like if mom and dad just took care of it and arranged it back when you were 12? And, you know, when you hit 20, this is your destiny. We're not used to that anymore. And I'm not saying that, yeah, I know that happened in the Old Testament. I guess my biblical foundation for this point would be 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 39. And Paul, speaking of marriage, says, "The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord." Now you say, well, he's talking about widows. I understand that. I guess my argument would be that if it's all right for a widowed lady to get married to whom she will in the Lord, I would suggest that is probably how the Christian marriage should generally work, that these people choose each other in the Lord, of course. And I could go on that, but I think I'll stop. I think a wise parent, again, I'm not suggesting a wise youth will very much include their parents in that process. You're on the other side of it. I'm just saying I don't think if your parents are wise, they make the choice for you. But I think if you are wise, if I can say that, you involve your parents. Got it? So we're talking about different things. Okay, and the fourth and last one is what a wise parent will not decide for their child is how their home, I'm talking about their child's own home, will function. And this brings up the verse that Steve mentioned a little bit ago, Matthew 19, verse 4 through 6. And Christ speaking, he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain, two different ones, shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder.'" And God forbid that there's any parents like this in our churches, but I'm afraid we're human enough that sometimes there is, that parents can be guilty of putting asunder a marriage in a lot more ways than just encouraging separation and divorce. Parents that mess into and take part or take sides in their child's marriage are generally, almost always, I would say, doing more harm than good. Again, they are there for counsel. And I would encourage any of you, if you come into marriage, it's wonderful. I love that my wife, when she faces something with one of our daughters, she calls her mom. That's great. But at the end of the day, finally, this is our home. And whether it's my in-laws or whether it's my parents, they really have no business deciding when do our children get shots, when they do this, when do we that. It needs to be something that Debbie and I work together on. And we choose the route, of course. Feel free with counsel. Another thing I would very much caution against, if for any of you that God leads into marriage, is I am all for seeking counsel, but if it's something that involves your partner or involves the training of your children, make sure that your spouse is okay with you sharing this with your parents and asking for input. Because there's something a little bit difficult. You know, all those in-law jokes and stuff out in the world, they're not good. Don't get me wrong. But there is a basis in that there's something. When you grow up quite differently and you pull this together and you're trying to build a home, you both automatically use the points of reference that you grew up with. And so guess who? If I have a high appreciation for my mom and dad, which is a good thing, if I have a question, guess who I'm going to call? And guess what they're going to tell me? They're going to tell me things that confirm my already existing point of reference, right? Well, let's say Debbie calls her dad mom. And they will encourage her existing point of reference. Now we took a potentially simple thing that could have been worked through, and we've got it amped all out of proportion because we're both digging in based on what the way we grew up. Does that make sense? And that may be more different. I find it fascinating to be married to someone that grew up in quite a different setting and things than I do. For others, maybe not. They wouldn't. But I think they need to work together. But make sure parents stay in their place, especially once you're married. If your parents are unduly trying to control or influence you in any of these areas, I would feel, in the four I mentioned, I would feel it's mandatory you find counsel and direction from either mature Christians that are in your life or reputable church leaders, people that aren't necessarily going to say what you want to hear, but are going to tell you what you need to hear. Does that make sense? Because it's very, very vital. For you just to go it alone and think we can figure this out, you will end up probably being not honoring them and probably still making the right choice. Okay, what should a child whose parents are continually provoking them do? You know, the Bible tells children obey your parents, and it says, Father, provoke not your children. So if your parents provoke you, what should you do? Anybody want to tell me? I guess I'll say it this way. There's a poster I saw a number of years ago, and I still use it extensively, and that's fairly simple to remember. Respect. Give it to get it. So let's say dad is way out of place. I know of some home situations where that's the case. Your duty is still to respect. I'm not saying obey in every area, but respect. You know, one of the most difficult things to deal with as a leader, for me at least, whether it's in the home, in the business, or in church, is a person that's disrespectful. Because the last thing I want to do is hang on to my position or defend my authority. And so when you have somebody that does that, it is just unhandy. And so, dear young people, if you can just respect, you bring a whole level of communication and openness to a relationship that's destroyed when you don't, because it just messes it up. Regardless of how wrong others may be, God still has a right way for me, for you, in relating to them. In God's view of relationships, failure on the part of one is not an excuse or a liberating of me to do wrong. And you know, we do this all the time. My daughters are adept at that. If I catch one hitting another one or doing something very carnal that they're not supposed to, and I say, hey, what's going on? Oh, well, but they did this. And you know what? I wish it would stop at 5 and 6 years old. But I have seen 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and probably even 80-year-olds doing this. I do this because they did that. No, no, no. That's not what God says. Regardless of what they do, I do this. You know, many of the strained parent and child relationships I have witnessed, there's often a deadlock in forgiving and accepting that I bear part of the responsibility for it. As in any relationship, if the fault is all the other person or the other party, I'll just tell you right now, you will never resolve it. I don't care whether it's with your parents, whether with your spouse, whether with your church. As long as I'm standing here and saying it's all their problem, whatever you face, it can't be fixed. If I can start saying I have a problem, then we can work on it. Okay, you are more control and responsible than what you think you are. So some things you can do. Be willing to take the initiative. You know, generally young people would be, it's so great if dad, mom, whoever takes time and they sit down and they ask you these questions and they include you and they ask your thoughts and your advice and your counsel. Don't you like that? That's wonderful. And if your parents do that, you probably don't even appreciate it because that's how they do. But let's say they don't do that. So maybe dad, mom don't share and include you the way you wish they did. How about you including them? You know, generally what happens is if a youth feels like their parents aren't really including them, then they try to start doing their own thing on the side. Do you know what that does? It amplifies the problem. So do you want to make this a bigger problem or do you want to make it smaller? If you want to make it smaller, you say, yeah, I wish they would ask me about taking this family trip or what I thought about this. But they didn't. Guess what? They didn't. I can't fix that. But you know what I can do? I can tell them that, hey, my friends and I want to do this rather than just disappearing. Or I can say, hey, I'm on the youth committee and we'd like to do this and this before we have our meeting. Do you have any input as parents? Just involve them. Maybe your complaint is dad and mom don't treat you like an adult. That's possible. I've seen that happen. Maybe the number one question for youth to ask is, do you act like one? All youth act like adults all the time, no sweat. But just for anyhow, for the fun of it, ask yourself and answer it honestly. If you can honestly say you do, then do the next step very carefully and respectfully. But maybe it's your turn to say, hey, Dad, Mom, I need to talk. And then very carefully and respectfully, of course, sit down and tell them, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but I had my 18th birthday about 5 months ago. And I've got this idea, and I think it's wonderful. And you all just think it's, could you know, I'm serious. Could we treat it like an adult? What do you think? Maybe, just maybe they forgot you grew up. They can get busy. Or maybe the other thing, maybe they're denying the facts of how old you are. I don't know.
But if you can respectfully do that, I have no problem with it. Now, I know I'm a little weird in some people's eyes. I don't mind dialogue at all. In fact, I encourage it on every front. But I think if it's done respectfully, I think that can be a good thing. Another thing, if you don't feel like they treat you an adult, maybe it's partly your fault, is have you earned their trust? Are you trustworthy? If they tell you to be home at a certain time, are you there? Or do they have to check up on you? And if you're not there, is it for a good reason or a bad reason? Now we could go on. I need to keep moving. One other thing that seems to shock youth that I've discovered is that many parents are intimidated by their youth. Now, I can tell you, I was beyond youth age the first time I discovered that I intimidated somebody. And it just, I couldn't believe that Joe Bowen, me, I'm just nobody. How could I intimidate anybody? I mean, never even crossed my radar before. And all of a sudden, this brother was like, "You intimidate me powerfully." I'm like, "Well, excuse me. What am I supposed to do?" So, potentially, maybe you're just, the relationship issues you face at home is you're intimidating your parents. I think I actually did that to Dad. Dad is a very, somewhat reclusive. He likes his books, he likes to study, and he really don't need very many other people around. I'm a little bit the opposite there. And I think another thing, his mind runs a little slower. Mine tends to, I don't need any coffee or anything to help me along. Let's just say it that way. And so I was usually out of the country by the time he was getting in first gear when we were trying to have a discussion. It made all sorts of grief. And, you know, just to slow it down, just to go at his pace, don't hurt me at all. So many children would be delighted to be more involved in their child's life. And if they're feeling intimidated, though, they're scared to come along. And so I would suggest to you as youth, this is some homework for you. Invite them along. Maybe you have been, but I think you could do even more. If you haven't been, start. You know, apologize where you have been and done wrong. And guess what? As I was studying for this message, I just got convicted. I didn't really have specifics, but I just could think of Bug Shield, for instance, and a couple other times that I just wish I would have done different. So I just called Dad and I said, "Hey, Dad, I'm studying on this message about honoring your father and your mother, and I just want to tell you, I think I failed in this. And for where I haven't already told you sorry, I want to say sorry right now." And guess what Dad said? He says, "Well, when you get my age, you just still realize how messed up you are yourself. You don't even think about others." So anyway. But don't wait till you're my age to do it. How much nicer would it be if you could have those years ahead of you that I have now, right? Apologize where you have been done wrong. I would hazard a guess for all of you that no matter how faulty and messed up your parents may be, you probably haven't been a perfect child, have you? Just a perfect child. So you probably got somewhere you can start. You know, I see so many relationship issues drag on for years because no one is brave enough to admit the mistakes and missteps. Don't let that happen to you. So maybe there's nothing, but I'd like to give you homework right here, and I don't know how you are exactly. I didn't come from a real huggy family. At the same time, I think we should have been more that way, so I still try to do it where I can. But I would suggest that all of you, if you have some things that come to your mind as I shared this, write it down so you don't forget it and as your cup runs over the rest of this weekend or whatever. But when you get home, just give your dad and mom both a hug or something, however you can handle to do this. And that's hard when you're a teenager, depending how you've grown up. But I don't think it'll hurt them. I think they'll survive the surprise. And just tell them I'm sorry for where I haven't been the perfect son or daughter. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. If a child can do that, there's very few parents that are tough enough not to reciprocate something. Go see what happens. Maybe it'll surprise you. Maybe you'll see a side of your parents you never saw. But you know, look for good in your parents, buried as it may be. And I would like to suggest something. If you sit here today and you think, all the stuff he's saying, maybe that works for 99.9%, but it don't work in my situation. May I suggest to you that I really question whether the biggest problem isn't in your own heart rather than with your parents. I'm not saying your parents don't have problems. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if you can't find any good and you can't find any crack where you think you could build something better, I think your attitude about them is the biggest problem. You know, without a sincere effort and owning of the problem, you will actually repeat your parents' mistakes. You will, and you will.
And you don't have to be very much older than most of you are to all of a sudden start realizing how much you do that. You know, the things you, I don't know what, maybe hate's too strong a word, the things you dislike most in your parents are very likely going to be the very area you're going to struggle in. That's like I just told a young good friend of mine recently. He was struggling intensely with his dad, and he's about my age. And he's got as many boys of his own as I have girls of, and I told him, you know, before too many years, your sons are going to be the ones that are sitting with someone telling them this. How, what do you want them to do? And the same thing for you. These tables turn so fast. Right now, you are the youth, yes. But when you are no longer the youth, what are you going to do? If you find yourself in a situation where your parents desire and or ask things that conflict with God's, what God is asking you, remain respectful and deferential. I think I owe it to my parents to allow them, even today, to tell me what they think about the church I go to, about how I serve God. It's not saying that I am going to go to our brethren's meeting and says, Dad thinks we should do it this way. No, I'm not, by no means. But at the same time, I still owe it to my dad to hear him out. If he's got a burden on his heart, let him share it. You know, still include them in your life. It's so easy. I think that's usually the biggest problem I see when people become having strains among each other. They start cutting them off, you know. They don't go home as often. They don't visit. And I've had my share of conflicts. And one of them was recently, one of the parents in our lives had some, a bit of a criticism in my child training. You know, it was difficult to take because I didn't think they had a clear picture completely. But be that as it may, you know what one of the first things was? Well, if he feels that way, I'll just make sure he doesn't see me train him much. Carnal, big time. I told you last night that I don't feel like a Christian sometimes. That was one of the times. You know, I need to go right back. And if I laid it before God and I know this is what God, how God wants me to train him, I had better just keep on. If he had some legitimacy, grow. But don't avoid them. Going back to what we faced before we got married, I still don't know. I still have some regrets. I wish it could have been done differently. I don't necessarily have the regret that we didn't do what they asked, per se, if that makes sense. But I wish I could have related more respectfully in the way that I responded to their request, at a minimum. Some things later in life, I feel, have somewhat vindicated the stand I took. At the same time, I say that very carefully and vindicated. I don't feel good about it. I still wish I could have done very differently. And I just thank God so much that I was able to put my arms around my father-in-law and say, I'm sorry. And he says, I forgive you, even though I still probably don't feel like I was all in the wrong. Make sense? And I'm so glad that I was able to do that in time. One other thing, back to the bank account. What should I have done? To this day, Dad thinks I'm wrong about what amount is in which bank account. And to this day, I know he's wrong. You know, sometimes respect dictates that I'm just quiet. Got to thinking, what does it really matter? What does it really matter? Neither was in danger of running dry because of his opinion at the moment. So someday he's going to sit down and look at those statements and like, okay, so how do you honor your parents? Especially as you get older. You know, I noticed something strange on Father's Day this year. I want to say this carefully. But I noticed a number of young men posting photos of either their dad or them and their dad. And especially the one stood out to me, maybe even above the others. He posted a photo of him and his dad. And he put the caption on, I love this man. But yet, friends, his life is anything but what his dad would like to see. I And I'm not here to judge him. But are we after a photo op? A bit of a little opportunity to look, make ourselves look good? I don't know what he was trying to do by that. I let that with God. If you want to do that, and it's right, it's okay. But you know what I think would honor my father a whole lot more than trying to take a picture saying I love this man and post it around for the world to see, is do I build on what this man or this woman has done for me? You know, as life continues and changes, often the biggest challenge in honoring my parents is not so much one of doing exactly as they say or did, but one of applying the lessons of life that they learned in the situation that I faced. You know, one of the most wonderful things for me to think about tonight is that possibly my daughters can avoid some knocks and rough spots in the road by the experience I've had. Here's one thing, if you could stick this, you know, we live in this culture of sound bites, so I'm going to wind it down here, but here's a sound bite out of this message for you if you need one. Remember, where your parents are, you have never been. Remember, where your parents are, you have never been. Where you are, your parents have been. So as weird as they seem sometimes there's a little bit more wisdom in their weirdness than what we give them credit for when we're in the spot some of you are. A wise child will consider this carefully. And another thing that's being brought more and more home to me, my parents are still both alive, as are my wife's parents. But I have many friends whose parents are no longer here. And you know, it's not that I call dad and mom every day and wonder what I should do or how to relate. We don't relate all that much. But I can tell you right now, the day, if they're with us in Arkansas, or the day I find out that dad or mom is no longer with us, there's going to be a part of my life that's going to be pulled out and gone forever. And one thing of my goal in relating to them now is when that part is gone, that I don't have to live with the regret of how I related to them. I'd like to read a poem that may be familiar to you, and I changed it slightly. But wonderful things of folks are said when they have passed away. Oh, how I've seen that. Roses adorn the narrow bed over the sleeping clay. Praises are heard not by the dead. Roses they cannot see. Let us not wait till souls have fled, a grateful child to be. Faults are forgiven when they lie cold in the narrow bed. I hope they are, hopefully. Let us forgive them before they die. Now should the words be said. Give them the roses while they live, trying to cheer them on. Useless the flowers that we give after the souls are gone. You know, I don't care how well you can give a praise and talk at potentially your parents' funeral. If you're not living a life now that's making them happy, it's all empty, friends. It's all empty. Can we stand for prayer?